Lynn Newsom. I have a prepared introduction, and I must say it's hard to give an introduction for someone you love and admire and keep it short, so I have something prepared here. Lynn was a member of our meeting for many years and a true gift, someone who says, "Here I am, Lord," and she shows up when she is called. Lynn became a convinced friend in 1969 during the Vietnam War when she realized that no other church seemed to believe that thou shalt not kill. As part of Chapel Hill Friends meeting, she served on the original board of Quaker House while attending the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. For nearly 30 years, Lynn was an active member of Community Friends meeting, and we still miss her. And she still considers it her beloved home and family, although she says that to many, I'm sure. After retiring from a 34-year career as an art teacher in Cincinnati to Charlotte, North Carolina, she and her husband, Steve, served on the board of Quaker House for Charlotte Friends meeting for 7 years before becoming their co-directors at Quaker House. And she and Steve will be retiring yet again after 5 years of service at Quaker House, which you'll be finding a lot more about this evening. So thank you all, friends. And Lynn will rise and speak out of the silence when she's ready.
I cannot tell you how absolutely thrilled I am to be here with you all. I'm like a kid in a candy shop, I was saying a minute ago. I became a Quaker in 1969, I believe it was, during the midst of the Vietnam War. And I went to lots of Quaker meetings as we moved around, but when I came to Community Friends, I truly found my home. I was in a tough spot in my life, as a lot of people are when they first start going to meetings. And Community Friends nurtured me, loved me, filled me with strength, and helped me grow into the person that I hope I am today and have been able to have the strength to do the work with Quaker House. So I love you all. You're my brothers, my sisters, my aunts, my uncles, my children. Is Shannon here? Shannon is my child. I raised her. Sorry, Marjorie. It was all me. So I'm just, thank you so much for having me. And Carol, thank you. Simmons, thank you so much for taking care of me and giving me a nice comfy comforter for my bed and getting me settled in. I really appreciate it. All right. So now you guys have to leave. All right. So in 1969, I found Chapel Hill Friends meeting. I saw this wonderful vigil every day at noon, led by the Quakers of Chapel Hill Friends meeting, protesting the war. And afterwards, they had cheese and crackers. And of course, being a student, I always went and was so impressed by them. And as soon as I had become a part of it is when this young man came up to Chapel Hill Friends meeting and asked for help. So I'll back up there and not get ahead of myself. So the mission statement of Quaker House is that it is a manifestation of the Friends peace testimony. And I love that word manifestation because we are truly a living witness of the Friends peace testimony. We are based in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which is the home of Fort Bragg, which is the largest Army military base in the country, in the world, actually, for United States. And pretty soon, sooner or later, almost everyone in the Army will go to Fort Bragg at one point or another. So our reach is far greater than Fort Bragg because so many of the soldiers go in and out and go around the world. We provide counseling and support to service members who are questioning their role in the military. We educate them and their families and the public about military issues. That's what I'm doing here today. I'm here to let you know about our military and their problems and advocate for a more peaceful world. Can everybody hear me okay? Let's let me know. All right, so this young man showed up at the doorstep of Chapel Hill Friends meeting. He had been told by a Unitarian in Fayetteville that if you want help getting conscience objection, you should go to Chapel Hill and find a meeting. So he got there and he asked for help in getting a conscience objection status. And he said, Quakers need to be in Fayetteville to help the service members. So Chapel Hill Friends meeting rented this little house in Fayetteville, and it was to be a place of peace in a military city. There at the house, they offered help with conscience objection. GIs United Against the War met there, published something called Bragg Briefs, which is a little anti-war newspaper, and at night they'd go on base and scattered around base and then run out before they were discovered. And they had many anti-war protests. One of them, which I was at, standing right behind Jane Fonda on the porch of Quaker House, the next week the house was firebombed. So Quaker House had no home, and no one wanted to rent to them or give them a place to be. And there were a lot of GIs that needed help. So Bill Carruthers was an active member of GIs United Against the War, and he had just been discharged, and he used his GI Bill to purchase a home with a VA mortgage, and then he handed the mortgage over to Quaker House. We were having a board meeting at Quaker House a few years ago, and he came to the door just on a random visit, and he got a standing ovation from the board. We've been there ever since. Okay, over the years, the directors have added their own gifts and their own ideas to Quaker House, so the mission has grown and grown. At first, it was all they could do just to take care of the poor guys who had been drafted into a war they didn't believe in and didn't want to participate in. But then the Arnings came in, and they started helping GI wives, having potlucks, and getting friendly press. Before then, Quaker House was kind of enemy of the Fayetteville community because they were trying to get people out of the military. But the Arnings were coming in saying, we are here to help you, and we want to give you a nice home to go to. Sooner after they were here, Bill Scholler came, and he had gotten a CO discharge, and he produced a discharge upgrading handbook. I don't know if you all have been following the news, but a lot of Vietnam veterans were discharged with less than honorable discharges and had not been able to get their medical benefits. That's just the beginning of the terrible things that the Vietnam veterans have gone through. It's a horrible, horrible things have gone on. So PTSD was not recognized at that time, so many of these soldiers were discharged with less than honorable, were not able to get medical help. But in the last couple of years, the laws were passed that they could now go back and get those upgraded if they could prove the PTSD. A little bit late, I think. Okay, so the Gosneys, still living in North Carolina, still active in the Quakers, he had gotten draft counseling, and he counseled Marines, and he produced a guide called It's Our Right, a guide to GI rights, and Should You Enlist? So we're starting to get our messages out in written word as well as in spoken word. Greg Summers increased counseling and brought information for the first time on military service to high school students. Now we have the all-volunteer army. Now we need to get the word out to our high school students of what they need to look out for, and I'll get more into that later. Stephanie Atkinson had refused to go active duty in the Gulf War, and when she got her discharge, she became the director of Quaker House. Heidi Balla had been severely harassed by men in her workship and went AWOL, and Stephanie Atkinson brought attention to it when she was brought up for being AWOL, and brought national attention to the issue of the sexual harassment of women in the military. So once again, we're starting to have more of a national influence as we let the country know of what's going on in the military. Sandy Schweitzer was a diversity and conflict resolution trainer, and she helped develop the GI Rights Hotline Network, which I'll talk about a little more later. At that time, there was a terrible racist murder and other racist things going on in the community. So by divine intervention or divine, I get very inarticulate when I get excited, I'm sorry. She was brought to Quaker House at the right time for filling the need that was needed then in the community. So she did prejudice reduction and racism education at that time. Phil Esmond produced a TV program called GI Lies. I don't know if you're familiar with Georgia Senator Max Cleland, but he was a amputee, lost I think all of his limbs. And he suffered greatly from moral injury, and he began the VET centers, which are free and confidential centers for soldiers to go for counseling. So he was very remarkable in the work he did. He got a hold of this program and gave it to the Pentagon to try to help stop the lies that were told to GIs when they were being recruited. All right, so to the present, Lenore Yarger and Steve Wolford stepped in to volunteer for Quaker House to take the GI Rights Hotline when we were without a director for a while. And they have become probably the best authorities on military law around. They are called by military people sometimes for their opinions on things. So they are real leaders. We're so blessed to have them. When Chuck Fager came on as the director, he told the board that Steve and Lenore needed to be kept on. They live in a Catholic worker community. They share it with homeless families. Wonderful couple. Chuck, you may know. How many of you know Chuck Fager? Oh, yeah. He was there the longest. He was there 11 years, and he's a prolific writer since he's been retired. A lot of people ask me what he's up to. Since he's been retired, he's written 6 books in a couple of years. He's turned his meeting into a complete activist center in North Carolina. He's busy. But his main calling and his main reason, divine reason, for being at Quaker House when he was there was that the military was very busy trying to cover up the domestic violence, the sexual assaults, the family problems, the torture that was going on. And they were busy covering it up because they need people to join the military. They don't want to have a military that fathers don't want their daughters to enlist in. They want to have everybody think the military is this wonderful, happy place. But Chuck made it very clear that they could not be covering these things up and educated the public on these things. And so he served a perfect, he was there at the right time, at the right place. Now, when we came in, I'll talk about that more later. Let's go on to this. All right, so these are some of the things that we have been doing over the years. Starting out with the draft and the involuntary army, I should call them, peace rallies and protests were very important because the soldiers could participate no more. So it's very difficult now to have a protest because the soldiers cannot talk about against the war. But we had some very successful protests and rallies there, bringing attention to the deaths and the pitifulness of the wars. All right, so one other issue that we've worked on are the drones. They are used illegally, immorally, and they breed hostility and acts of revenge, reading off of my postcard there. We've made huge, giant-sized postcards and distributed them over the country. We have had forums. We've had protests. We had people come all the way from Ohio to help us in our protest. As you know, it's never clear how many times or where drone strikes are being made, and Obama was not exactly innocent in letting people know the extent of their use. So don't think it's just President Trump, because President Obama was just as secretive about the use and had his kill list, as you know. So we took the drone quilt project on the road. We had it at Fayetteville Friends meeting. We took it to Southern Appalachian yearly meeting and had people make squares for it, trying to raise people's awareness of the use of drones and the heavy cost it takes on civilian lives. All right, so the hotline counseling, there were phone lines all over the country, but in the 1990s, they brought them together into one central network. It went live in 1995, and it provides free, accurate, directive information about issues of conscience, discharge, medical, psychological, and other regulations. Anybody having trouble in the military can call us, and we will help. Now, you would think that these calls would have decreased after the draft, but instead they have increased because these, as you know, there are major reasons why people join the service. The economic draft, there is no other place for them to for people to find decent job and work and employment and health care. They're trying to get out of horrible home lives. They believe our country's propaganda that the wars are justified and that they are doing a wonderful thing. Then they get into the military, and it isn't too long before they understand the horrible things they are being asked to do. So that's when we start getting the calls. In 2016, they received 3,377 calls just for our branch. It was only a third of the entire GI Rights Hotline network. They come from all over the world because of the cell phone. They can get calls from Iraq, Afghanistan, any place, anywhere where there's a cell phone. They organize the training of other counselors. In 2013, the entire network handled approximately 15,000 calls from over 9,000 different callers, logging over 75,000 minutes of help. But this does not include callbacks and direct calls. This does not include the hours and hours our counselors spend getting the paperwork correct for people who are applying for conscience objection. If a soldier applies for conscientious objection on his or her own, his or her chances of getting that conscientious objection are very poor. But does Steve and Lenore help you? I think their rate is about 98%. They know how to put the words, they know how to say it, they know how to fight, and they are usually successful. The calls can be about many, many different things besides conscientious objection. That was our first and primary reason for having the hotline, but it has grown considerably. When I go to AWOL and unauthorized absence, let me give you an example of that. A woman called us, I think it was our first week there, and said that she had been AWOL for 10 years. She left because she had been so severely sexually harassed that she could only run away. The commander was not giving her any attention or help. So she ran away, and she became tired of looking over her shoulder and worrying that she was going to be caught up. So our counselors helped her go back, prove her case, and let her get an honorable discharge, which enabled her to get her medical benefits. That's our goal. We want them to get their medical benefits so they can get the counseling and help they need. The suicide rate, if someone is able to get into the VA system, the chances of suicide are much, much less. But the problem is, so many of these guys, they have the problems before they're discharged. They get less than honorable discharges, and then they don't qualify for the VA. Good news on that, though. After many years of struggle, they're going to start giving medical help to people with less than honorable discharges. This is just out this last year. I'd like to think that Quaker House had something to do with that because we have been working so hard at getting the word out on this along with other people. There have been so many soldiers who, because of their PTSD, because of their TBI, because of the problems they're having, get less than honorable discharge, and then they are on their way to suicide. It's just they're not getting the help they needed. Grievance and harassment. We had one woman who reported that she'd been sexually assaulted, and she became the poster child for Fort Bragg. Her picture was in all the videos that they showed at what they call the SHARP, sexual harassment and assault trainings. They have them periodically at Fort Bragg. And her company was so angry with her for having reported this and gotten their fellow soldier in trouble that they started bullying and harassing her to the extent that she couldn't stand it anymore. So she called Steve and Lenore, and they started working with her to get a medical discharge, and they recognized that she needed help. So the next thing you know, she was seeing our therapist, Joanna, who worked with her and helped her. And then pretty soon you're going to see a slide. The Human Rights Watch group came down and interviewed her and talked to her. So it's that kind of thing that we fill a need that no one else can seem to fill. Here's a sample email. I think we got this right in our first month. I cannot handle being in the Army any longer. I need to help to apply for a CO. I feel I have a pretty good argument for CO status, non-religious based. I was deployed during 2012, involved in a civilian casualty incident that resulted in 3 dead civilians and 2 wounded. I returned from that deployment in October 2012. 2 days ago, I appeared at this hearing of the CIVCAS incident and had to explain my full story and was asked questions about it. I feel as though I'm reliving the entire experience, feeling every bit of remorse for my actions. I cannot continue to do this anymore. I will not go back to war. If you can help me, it would be more than appreciated. Called up Stephen Lenore, they took his case, and they helped him get a medical discharge with his benefits. This next one was one of the hardest we saw. We got a call from the wife of a soldier who had PTSD and TBI. TBI is traumatic brain injury, and you know PTSD is traumatic post-traumatic stress disorder. I use the acronyms. I hope you know what they are. He was in such bad shape that his wife had to lead him like a child. She brought him to Quaker House, and she asked the press to come and do an interview so she could let the public know about what he was going through. He had tried to commit suicide once, sent back into his company, realized he was suicidal again, went to the hospital. His commander charged him with AWOL and brought him to be less than honorably discharged. So his wife was outraged and advocated for him. The problem for most of these guys is they can't advocate for themselves. They are really wounded. They're the invisibly wounded warriors. So if they don't have a wife or a mother or a father or friends that can help them, they're lost. 22 suicides a day, 20 today. This is why. They're not getting the help they need. She wrote this letter to the general, the head general of Fort Bragg. He realizes he is no longer fit for duty and he is not disputing leaving the service, but he wants out in a way that will allow him access to the benefits that he has so greatly earned. He came in 100% medically and mentally fit. He is leaving as a shell of the person he once was. His service has stolen his soul, his willpower, his mental capacities, and he feels it has stolen his life as well. He is owed an honorable discharge with full access to the benefits he fought 7 years for his country to earn. I worry every day that I'm going to wake up and he won't be there. I don't want my husband to think that his life is meaningless and that his service was for nothing. This is what's so hard, is thinking your service is for nothing. This is what's so hard now. A friend of ours who committed suicide, Jacob George, he was riding bicycles across the country. It was called the Bike for Peace, and he was going to bike until there was peace. And then came the surge, and he realized it was going to be a long time. So he committed suicide. We have to let them know that their lives are of value. She said, I don't want to be a widow from this. Please don't let my husband become one of the Army's nasty statistics that they are trying to sweep under the rug. And I forgot to mention that he had 4 children and 3 were special needs. Steve and Lenore went to work for him. We have a volunteer psychiatrist who works for us. She lives up in Winston-Salem. That's the closest we've been able to find a psychiatrist to volunteer to work for us. And she did a complete analysis of him, and they were able to prove that he had the PTSD and the TBI, and so he got his benefits and got his honorable discharge. And they're doing well. Their picture was in one of their our newsletters a while back. Supporting conscience is something we've always done. And Ricky Clausing was an interrogator in Iraq. And you know what that means. He was a born-again Christian, and he tried to convince the Army intelligence that interrogation techniques were self-defeating. Enhanced interrogation, another word for torture. He went AWOL when he could not continue using those techniques. And Quaker House supported him through his trial, getting media attention, exposing the interrogation techniques, and provided him with visitation and letters of support while he served his sentence. Jeremy Hinsman was trying to get his CO and wasn't able to get it processed in time. He was ordered to deploy to Iraq, so he and his family fled the U.S. and went to Canada in 2004. His appeal for refugee status has been denied, and his appeals exhausted. Canada is no longer allowing our soldiers to seek refuge there. In fact, soldiers trying to seek refuge are having a very difficult time finding places where they can have sanctuary. We're hoping with the new Trudeau that hopefully that'll be turned around. But I don't know if you read about 2 years ago, a woman was let out of Canada in chains, a mother of 2. She had run off, and they arrested her and they sent her back. They wanted to send Jeremy back, but he's got such a supportive community that it's just been kind of resting, and we're hoping that Canada will turn around on this pretty soon so he'll be able to stay. But when we moved into Quaker House, we were cleaning out the garage, and I came upon this little knapsack full of baby clothes that he had left behind. And he'd left behind a whole bunch of books that my husband cried over because they'd gotten all gnawed up and chewed up. They were wonderful books. So it becomes very real when you find things like that. They literally fled in the middle of the night. These are 2 soldiers and families who recently applied for conscience objection, received it. The guy on the right, Eric Finney, Chris Harmer, helped him when he finally was out and got to Louisville, so he knows the family well. Eric came to us. He'd been a medic, and he was told he could not treat the women and children that came to him needing help because they didn't want the community to get too used to getting help from our medical people. Well, he has 2 little girls, and he couldn't handle that. So that was part of his turning around. But he had a slow turnaround of conscience and realized that he could not kill, could not participate in war. He saw some pretty horrific things, which he detailed in his conscience objection application. He came to Quaker House, and he had found a home. He'd found a refuge. He became part of our meeting. He started going to our mindfulness groups. He came to our concerts. He was our little boy for a while. And when it took over a long time for him to get his conscience objection. That's the problem, is that they drag it out as long as they can. And he was being so harassed and bullied that he was fearing for his life. So his last night after he was discharged, he spent on our couch because he was told that the guys in his unit were going to come after him. All right, how many of you have heard of Bo Bergdahl? Yeah. Bo is a classic case of the military taking whoever they could get at the time they needed bodies, no matter what their previous conditions, not getting the medical help he needed while he was in the military. And now he's paying the price. He was in the Coast Guard. If any of you have heard the show Serial, he had a very difficult upbringing. He was diagnosed with affective schizoid. Is that right, Deborah? Thank you. Schizoid. And I feel like from listening to Serial, he probably had some Asperger's. Very difficult childhood. Isolated, abusive father. Don't quote me on that. He wanted to be somebody wonderful. He wanted to be a ballet dancer. He wanted to be a policeman. Those things were always turned off for him. He couldn't do it. But the military was there. He could be a great military person. He went in the Coast Guard, and during basic training, had a complete breakdown and was discharged. Still wants to go in the military. Guess what? The Army will take him. They're happy to have him. So, as you might know, when he was over in Afghanistan, he decided that his commander was putting the soldiers' lives at risk, which is probably true, in his unit, and he didn't know how to help them, so he decided that he would walk from his base to the command base and report his commander. Right after he left the base, he was captured by the Taliban, and he was severely tortured. I mean severely tortured and kept in a little cage. President Obama was able to get his release, and instantly, Mr. Trump at that time and Senator McCain started calling him a traitor, coward. So the military had very little choice, according to them, but to bring him up for court-martial. We are supporting him. He comes to Fort Bragg for his hearings, and we go to his hearings. We shake hands with him. We tell him we're there to support him. He smiles from ear to ear. Anytime you feel like a visit to North Carolina, his court-martial starts on October 23rd. You're welcome to come and help and join us to support him. Very few people are there. His father wrote to us, "Thank you for your support. Please continue to support him at his proceedings. I don't think there are many people with a compassionate interest in his fate. His family, friends, veterans, even anti-war activists have voiced opinions to us that he alone is responsible for his actions and must face the consequences. This angers me. I cannot disagree more. Army leadership is incompetent, irresponsible, and culpable for every action of every soldier since their nonsense began in Afghanistan, October 7, 2001. 16 years of disastrous results speak for themselves, but few listen to the voices screaming from Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq, etc. Please give our love and great respect to Quaker House for the important work they do." Up here is a couple of people from Vets for Peace who came down with us to help support Bo. All right, torture and accountability. In North Carolina, there's a little airport just about an hour north of Fort Bragg, and people called they look at the numbers, they follow the airlines, realize that the numbers on the air the airplanes that were leaving this little airport were showing up at Ireland and then going over to other countries like Yemen and Romania, figured out that these were, what are they called when they're brought, taken over for torture? Rendition! Thank you, it's up there. Okay, it would have helped if I'd had more than 4 hours sleep last night, I think. All right, so these are rendition flights. So Chuck, this was during Chuck's time, started going regularly to the Johnston County commissioners and pointing out the torture that was being done out of their airport, taking them fact after fact after fact, and all the materials that were needed to prove this got no response whatsoever. So Quaker House became very active in working against torture, urging an end to it. We became a founding member of the National Religious Campaign Against Torture and helped coordinate QUIT, the Quaker Initiative Against Torture. Are you all familiar with that? John Calvey heads that up. You can join it and become part of that. Trying to help people understand that the torture was taking place. A group that we are part of is called North Carolina Stop Torture Now. We have regular protests in front of the airport, and one of the women in it got the great idea to adopt the road. So now in front of the airport is the sign. This is a great idea, folks. Anytime you want to protest something, just name your group and put the name up there. North Carolina Stop Torture Now. I think Chuck's in this picture somewhere if you see him. It's a wonderful way to protest. Not only do you protest something, but you also help clean up the environment. We enjoyed it. All right, so here we are at various protests demanding the release of the torture report. Stephen Lenore up in Washington, D.C., asking to close Guantanamo. And we protested regularly outside Senator Burr's office. Senator Burr was one of the primary people that had an influence on whether or not the torture report would be released. So we sent these giant, this is all Chuck's doing, this stuff, these giant bright colored postcards. Chuck was told the colors to use if you want to get attention are red, black, and yellow. So everything Chuck sends out is red, black, and yellow. So we asked the president to urge full investigation of the torture. We asked Senator Burr to release the Senate report. Now, I don't want to take credit for this because we weren't that active in it, but this North Carolina Stop Torture Now group was credited for getting the report released because Senator Burr was right on the line. He did not want to get this released. But this North Carolina Stop Torture Now group turned the page, and he had to fold on it because we had ministers from all over the state saying, we need the truth about torture. All right. If you have questions, well, I guess I'm supposed to wait till the end, but if you have questions, just let me know. Truth in recruiting. How many lies? They say that you can tell when a recruiter is lying when his lips are moving. It's pretty bad, folks. It's pretty bad. Okay, so Chuck came up with this Sergeant Abe. We changed the image. I don't know if any of you are familiar with this, but we were having a hard time getting into high schools because the previous image was so scary looking, so we put in a friendlier face in it. It's to let people know that there is much that you need to know before you think about joining the military. Military enlistments are potentially unlimited in length. If the military feels they need you back, they have that right. Recruiters' promises are often not valid or honored. So many times, well, for instance, one person I know that came to us had a drug problem before he went in the military. He was given a very high-level intelligence job in the military, very high up there. Couldn't talk about it. And he went back, he had a relapse, wanted to kick him out for, oh, I know, I'm sorry, got ahead of myself. He told the recruiter he had the drug problem. The recruiter said, oh, just erase that. Take that off. Leave it off. And that's what they do constantly. So somebody will tell what's going on, and they'll say, leave it off. So he had a relapse, and he was going to get kicked out for less than honorable. And he fought it on his own and was able to get the honorable. And then after that, he found out about us and came and volunteered for us because he wanted more people to know about us to help others when they need it. Military service often does not pay off in future job earnings. The unemployment rate is very high. The hazards of military service include much more than just getting killed or wounded. Women in the military face a high incidence of harassment and rape, 1 in 3. It's an extremely male culture. The unit does not want it reported. They harass people who report it, and it's men as well as women. Sexual harassment and rape on men is just as frequent is very frequent, not as frequent as with women. Military life, incredibly stressful on families. The divorce rate is sky high, the domestic violence. The delayed enlistment program, potential enlistees are often falsely told they cannot get out of the program. And I have a nice, funny story to tell you about that one. We'll get calls from fathers, mothers, and the kids themselves saying, I joined the DEP, that's the delayed enlistment program. They sign them up in high school and tell them they've got to join because they're in it. But they don't. They just don't need to show up, and it's over. So Steve was on the phone with this kid, and the kid said, they're coming for me. And Steve says, don't answer the door. You don't have to answer the door. He says, well, he's coming to get me. Steve goes, don't answer the door. Doorbell rings. I'm going to get the door. Steve's saying, don't answer the door. The kid puts the phone down, and Steve is going, don't answer the door, yelling into the phone. But the kid left with the guy, but luckily when he got there, he had been told well enough by Steve Wolford that he did not have to stay. But that's the kind of things they do. All right, violence in the military. You take people into the military with troubled homes. You take people into the military with previous difficult situations and mental problems. You teach them to kill. You teach them not to think about it when they commit acts of violence. You send them home after being deployed in a violent atmosphere, and you don't give them any kind of counseling on the other end. What's going to happen? Yeah, so we have to pick up the pieces. Quaker House is picking up the pieces of these destroyed lives. These are a couple of examples. This woman was murdered by her husband on the left, just been discharged from the Army. On the right, Christine Horner's mother had been murdered in 1974 when she was about 6 years old. She was never told what happened. She was shipped off to live with grandparents. She came back to Fayetteville, and she was told to come to Quaker House for help. And they looked up and found her mother's tomb, and they were able to connect her with family friends so that she had some closure and was able to understand what had happened. So there's record-breaking suicides, family abuse, sexual assaults, and murder. We're monitoring and trying to combat the violence. Here's where another angel came into our lives. When we had just gotten the job, Chuck Fager said, you've got to do something about the domestic violence. Got to do something about that. And I thought, well, what in the world can I do? And I had a little dream that I'd be able to go on base and go talk to somebody on base and say, what can we do to help? That was my dream. And I thought, how in the world is that going to happen? You know, it's just me, the 34-year veteran art teacher. You know, how am I going to be able to do this? 2 weeks into the job, we got a call that a woman was giving a donation to fund a domestic violence program. I was able to go on base and talk to the people on base and say, we have this program for helping people who have been victims of domestic violence. How can we help you? I was welcomed with open arms. Turns out that since Chuck's time when the military tried to cover up, since then, the military is not able to cover up. In fact, everything is becoming extremely exposed and known, and now the military is looking for help. Plus, let me tell you, these people are sick and tired of war. They would like nothing better than to see the end of war. I have been in conferences with the military where a veteran has stood up and said, there is nobody alive that does not hate war with all his heart and soul. So I was invited out to a chaplain's group on Fort Bragg. And I sat there surrounded by the domestic violence head, the sexual assault head, the directors, chaplains. And I said, you know, Quakers are pacifists, which means we don't believe in war. We're against war. But we believe we are responsible for helping those who are victims of war, who are our service members and our veterans. And the guy next to me, the chaplain next to me, said, Jesus was a pacifist. And I said, thank you. That's very true. And the chaplain that had invited me out there had been through a horrific deployment to Iraq, and he was himself suffering from moral injury. And he said, I am so thankful for the work that you have done over these years, because by golly, if a soldier wants out, he should be let out. Do you realize how revolutionary that is to be spoken on Fort Bragg by a military chaplain? So here's our hope. Our hope is that we can make it easier for people to get conscientious objection. Our hope is that we can be of more help and get more help for people that are victims of war with the help and with the military. It's through our connections with the military that we are able to help more powerfully. Here's our poster that we have displayed everywhere. Since our beginning, we've made many connections. I think I've already talked about this. Yep. And now our therapist is helping many clients, including family members and children that witness the violence in the home. She sees them and helps them also. All right, we have programs against domestic violence, bringing education to it. We go to vigils, and I get invited out to base. I get to go to the base. I was invited by the 528th Sustainment Brigade Sexual Harassment Assault Response and Prevention Stand Down Training Day, SHARP for short. Oh, I'm glad we can laugh. We have to laugh or we'll cry, right? So here's the benefit. Right beside my domestic violence poster is my GI rights poster. Now, when we first came to town, a colonel's wife said, I'd like to have a flyer of the things you do on base. Spouses are responsible for the health and welfare of the units that their spouse is in charge of. That's a little thing that goes along with being in the military life. Her husband said, no, we can't put that on base. It talks about conscience objection. So she said, I'm so sorry. We can't do it. Well, it wasn't a few months later that after we began our domestic violence program that we are welcomed and are allowed to have our flyers all over base. And our primary, we get most of our referrals from victims advocates at Fort Bragg. Here's talks about, these are the Human Rights Watch lawyers. They wrote a report on the harassment of sexual assault victims in the military, and they came down to Quaker House and interviewed our clients, especially the one that had been the face of sexual assault. Here we are having a vigil at the grave of the woman I told you about earlier who was murdered. Domestic Violence Awareness month program at Fort Bragg, me and a sea of the uniforms, and then Steve was interviewed by the television station local after the Congressional Report on Sexual Assault in the Military is released. Okay. Have I said everything I want to say about that? So our program started out to be the Quaker House Domestic Violence in the Military Counseling Program. After the woman came who'd had the problems with the sexual assault, it became the Domestic Violence, the Quaker House Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Counseling in the Military Program. And then along came moral injury. So now we are the Quaker House Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, and Moral Injury Counseling Program for the military. And, of course, we take in anybody that needs help. So we have a lot of the PTSD victims, too. But PTSD often works with moral injury, and I'll get onto that later. All right. So Alternatives to Violence Project training attracted me. I took a workshop at FGC, and I realized that what we really need for our soldiers is a reverse boot camp because they are given the resiliency, quote unquote, to be able to go over and kill without thinking, reflexive shooting it's called. They are taught to shoot to kill without thinking about it. Then they come back and they're just put right back in with their families. So we feel strongly there needs to be reverse boot camp to try to rewire their brains from this violent mode. So we thought Alternatives to Violence might work well. So we began doing trainings, and we do them every year on Martin Luther King weekend. And we have had chaplains. Oh, and that's the chaplain that said that about Jesus being a pacifist. He's right in the middle of the three tall people back there. Social workers, we've been able to give continuing education credit to the social workers, so the Fort Bragg social workers come to us. These are our classes. The last one we had in 2017, I was able to finally realize the dream that I'd had because our primary attenders were the directors of the Wounded Warrior programs, and they're interested in using this for their wounded warriors. So that it was finally a realization of that dream of mine, and hope it continues. Okay, soul repair. We first heard about moral injury from the Baptist Peace Fellowship. And if you don't know anything about the Baptist Peace Fellowship, they are just like Quakers, but with a lot more music. They are incredible. They have a peace witness. They're welcoming and affirming. They work against torture. They're wonderful, wonderful people. So we went to one of their conferences early on and found out about moral injury. Soon after that, we were contacted, asked if we would like to co-sponsor a conference in Raleigh featuring the person who founded the Soul Repair Center at Bright Divinity School in Texas, Rita Nakashima Brock. She wrote the book Soul Repair. So we took part of that. We ended up being the major organizers. People went to the Quaker House website to register for that, which helped a lot. Ministers, chaplains, VA, military, civilian healthcare professionals, Vets for Peace members, service members, and more. The thing about moral injuries, once you understand it, and I am doing a workshop on it tomorrow, we all suffer from moral injury. All of us, sometimes in our life, have done things that we regret. Sometime in our lives, we might have done something cruel or mean or thoughtless that we knew better than to do. And we never forget it, do we? I did something in middle school that I have never been able to forgive myself for. In fact, I just was able to tell somebody about it. A couple of years ago, after learning about moral injury, I realized that it's healing to tell somebody about it. Well, you can imagine what it's like for these soldiers when they kill people. So, soul repair is to try to help these folks. And we realized the more we learned about moral injury, that injury is what has been bringing soldiers to Quaker House ever since we started, because it is the soldiers that have participated in these things which go against their innermost conscience, which we all have, and realize that they are doing wrong things, even though their country is telling them they are doing right things. They're the ones that have been coming to us for help. So recognizing moral injury is extremely important to the mission of Quaker House. Okay, here is a little Venn diagram giving you the difference. PTSD is a physical response to danger. It is fear. It's a startle reflex, memory loss, fear, flashbacks. Both of them have in common anger, depression, anxiety, insomnia, nightmares, and self-medication with alcohol or drugs. But moral injury has primarily the sorrow of things that were done or witnessed, the grief that they had to participate or were unable to do something about what they saw, the regret that they had been in the military in the first place, that they had participated in a war that was illegal and immoral, the shame of feeling they had done something so horrible, and feeling alienated. They don't feel as though they can be accepted by other people because they have done these shameful, shameful things. Why didn't I tell anybody why I had done this, that I had done this cruel thing back in middle school? It was because I thought if I told somebody, they would think less of me. So how is a soldier going to come home to his family or her family and tell them the horrors that they saw and participated with and feel like they'll still be accepted by their family? That's why so many Vietnam veterans disappeared into their bedrooms and drank every night. That's why so many World War II veterans were not able to talk to their families about what they had done because they were suffering from moral injury. Knowing about moral injury enables us to be more powerful in speaking out to help those that suffer from it. We are hoping that this will ease the soldiers who are applying for conscientious objection, ease their path, because right now when they apply for conscientious objection, they are bullied and abused, and the process is drawn out to a horrible long extent. So we're hoping that this will help them. Self-medication with alcohol or drugs, it's involved in so much of the self-injuries and so many of the problems that they have. Our therapist we have a wonderful, wonderful therapist, and she was, again, somebody brought to us by an angel. We had advertised on Craigslist, of all things, and had one person after another come interview for us, and we'd say, what do you know about the military? Not much. Joanna had just found out the day we were interviewing and said, is it too late? And she came, and she had worked at Fort Bragg. Her dad was in the military, had suffered from PTSD and moral injury. Her husband was in the military. Her sister was in the military. She had worked at Fort Bragg. She knew it in and out. She has been just magnificent. Our program would not be so successful without her. The victim's advocate at Fort Bragg know how good she is. The clients come back telling them how wonderful she is. So we are probably the first response for anyone that is needed, anyone who needs counseling in Fayetteville right now by the victims' advocates at Fort Bragg. So I'm very proud of her. She was working with alcohol abuse victims. She was told to do the counseling, and she had three soldiers come to her from the same company around about the same time, and she thought it was a little unusual that three guys would be coming to her at the same time and from the same unit. So she finally got one of them to tell her that they had misfired a missile and bombed a child care center. They were drinking to forget. Now see, the military would give them a dishonorable discharge for alcohol abuse. So our job, Quaker House's job, is to say, uh-uh, that is not the problem. The problem is moral injury. This person needs a medical discharge. Okay, so we have gone all over the country. We have been blessed by people who know us to get us into the VA. We went to the Asheville VA. We went to the Richmond, Virginia VA. We've gone to the Fort Bragg. A chaplain who is part of the Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ. They are a very liberal congregation, and they were the ones that came up with doing the Bright Divinity School Soul Repair Center. Their chaplain asked me to come out on base and talk to his entire battalion, 700 soldiers. I was terrified, but I was going to do it. 3 days before I was supposed to go out on base, his commander told him that it would hurt the fighting spirit of the soldiers, and he had to cancel. But he got me to their it's called Marriage and Family Life Consultants, and it's all of their social workers and counselors on base. So at least I was able to talk to them. But the chaplain asked me out there because the guys had just returned from a deployment and were involved in all kinds of very self-destructive behavior, and the chaplain was afraid for their lives. That's why he wanted so desperately to have me out there to talk about it. But he came and he taped me, videotaped it, and took it back to them. All right. You know, I keep telling people, they say, you're doing so much. Well, you know, it's not really our choice. Things keep getting brought to us. So this got brought to us. Joshua Eisenhower in Fayetteville was suffering severely from PTSD. He was supposed to be in a Wounded Warrior unit, but he wasn't. He was living in a little apartment. He had a mattress in the middle of his floor so he could watch everything, and he was completely hypervigilant. And there was a little, I guess, a cigarette fire on his balcony that he put out, but it was reported that there was a fire, so the fire engines and the ambulances all came with their sirens blaring, and they came and got to his door and started smashing it down. So he disassociated and thought he was back in Afghanistan and shot out towards them. Now, this guy was a highly trained marksman. He'd never got anywhere near shooting at those policemen and firemen. The shots were like way up. But he was shot 3 times. He was unconscious, went to the hospital. When he woke up in the hospital, the nurse recorded the first thing he said was, "Who's guarding the roof?" He went to trial. The policeman showed up, said he fired at our troops. He was given 10 to 18 years in prison. We finally managed to contact his mother and father, and they told us the story and talked to us about it, and we said, well, what can we do? So we began advocating. While advocating, we did some research and found out that there were over 700,000 veterans under the criminal justice supervision not getting the mental health care they needed. Joshua was put in a prison in a dormitory room with 30 other people, which is torture for somebody with PTSD. He could not rest, not for a second, couldn't do anything, just sit in a corner and watch. Right next to a firing range, his mother begged and begged to have him taken out of that prison and put somewhere else where they had better mental health care. One day before our vigil, he had a breakdown and he was moved to a prison with mental health care. His nurses looked at his chart and saw that on his chart it said advocacy group. He's getting good care now. They have to know that people care, and then they'll get the care they need. All right, so we arranged a vigil. And I've been going around getting people to pose with this sign, incarcerated vets with PTSD and TBI need mental health care. We support Joshua Eisenhower. Don't worry, you'll get your chance to pose with this. I forgot to bring them. I'm going to have to make some. Iraq Veterans Against the War came to visit us on our way to what they called Bird Dog Trump at a speech. Do you remember the speech he gave in Fayetteville where some guy was beaten and they were there? trying to bird dog is what they called it, Trump. All right, so we had the vigil, op-eds, petition. This to me is a very high moment for Quaker House for me, because at this vigil, we had veterans, faithful activists who probably marched in many marches against the war back in the earlier years, the NAACP, Quakers, VA people, Department of Defense people, the Human Relations Commission employees, all came together for our incarcerated veterans who need mental health care. Over on the far right, yes, that's a Vietnam veteran. The thought of a Vietnam veteran standing with Quaker House a few years ago would have been unthinkable. But we're working together now. We're working together to help these victims of war. All right, here's some more pictures. There I am at FGC, Southern Appalachian Yearly Meeting, Baptist Peace Fellowship. They rock. I'm telling you, you got to go to one of their conferences one of these times. They're wonderful. Since our advocacy work for the incarcerated veterans, a committee was formed to try to improve the life of our veterans in our prisons. Veterans dorms are being formed in prisons in Pennsylvania, in Florida, I think in somewhere in the Midwest, Indiana maybe, but they're wonderful for the veterans. They give them a sense. The thing that when veterans get out of the military, I think you all know this, there's this incredible bonding with their fellow soldiers in the service. They're together against insurmountable odds. They're working day and night to save each other's lives and to help each other. And when they're out and they don't have that family unit anymore, it's very, very difficult for them. So if when they become incarcerated, to have them in a unit with other veterans is very healing and helpful for them. They have other people that they can share their stories with and talk to that understand their needs. Most veterans who are in prison are probably a direct result of, number one, being recruited into the military when they might have had mental health problems. Number two, not getting enough adequate mental health care when they come back from deployments. Number three, not getting mental health care when they are veterans, not being able to get adequate mental health care. The alcoholism and the drug abuse is huge as far as getting incarcerated. So most of these guys would probably not be in prison today if they were not veterans. All right, so teaching conscientious objection. Our children need to understand what conscientious objection is and how to be recorded as a conscientious objector. Okay? Every meeting has a responsibility to do that. From the time a child is born into your meeting, you start saving the records of activities they've been in your meetings. You have them write letters expressing their thoughts about war and pacifism. When they're 18 years old, that's their time of celebration, of graduating, and that's the time you have them read to the meeting their letter explaining their feelings and convictions about war and pacifism and nonviolence. It's a wonderful thing to do with kids. They do this in Chapel Hill and Durham and other meetings. So please think about doing this if you don't do it already. On Saturday, I'm going to be working with the teens and teaching them all this, and I'm going to be giving each one of them a packet of information. If you have a teen or middle school kid, please tell them to bring you back that package, because it's meant for you and it's meant for your meetings as well. Kurt Terrell is our board treasurer, and he is so passionate about this. He wrote the book that we have just published and is available at our table for you. Every meeting should own one, and we go around talking to people about it. So please go to our website, The whole presentation is on our website about how to record conscious objection, what it is, what you need to know. The draft could come back. There are so few kids right now that are physically fit enough to be recruited in the military. You probably have heard that. So they're having a really hard time getting recruits. The all-volunteer army right now is in, they're sick and tired and wounded. They're worn out. Some of them have been deployed. One guy was deployed for 10 years of his kids' 13 years of life. These constant deployments have taken a huge toll on the children. There were 6 children that committed suicide in the Fayetteville schools last year, 4 of them military related. They're a huge toll, and they're just now looking at the toll that this has taken on the kids, just now. Did you have a question? Well, that's probably true. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so where was I with that? I think I'm done. All right, so women as well as men will be drafted if the draft is reinstated, so the girls need to have just as adequate an education and documentation as the boys. And probably if there is a draft reinstated, they'll go after IT people and medical people first. So just be aware of that. All right, so as you know, racism is all taken care of, right? No more racism. Isn't it wonderful? Ah, such a great racially harmonious world we live in. Well, in our dreams. We've realized how strongly racism plays a role in our wars. We are at war with people of color. So we feel as though work against racism is an important part of Quaker House's work. So we have been doing anti-racial relations workshops. We've been using a DVD series called Cracking the Codes, which is just excellent. We are now co-sponsoring with Fayetteville Now, the Human Relations Commission, the Cumberland County Educators Association, and the library to do these series of discussions. We've been doing, then we also brought together a program, United Against Racism and Islamophobia. We've participated in a Stand With Us rally at the mosque. We're doing what we can. Just this last couple of months, we did a series for the Black History Club at a high school in Fayetteville, and it went really well. The teenagers there, we asked them, well, what do you think can be done to work against the racism that you face in your school? And they said, I don't think anything can be done. It's just here. So a lot of our work is to raise their knowledge that things can be done and that it's not hopeless. All right, so we do all kinds of programs and concerts. Matthew Ho was a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, the former director of the Afghanistan Study Group. In 2009, he became the first State Department official to resign from his post in Afghanistan in protest over U.S. policies. This Council on Foreign Relations cited Matthew's resignation letter as an essential document. As a Marine, he was deployed to Iraq. In 2010, he received the Ridenhour Prize for truth-telling. That's not the whole story. When he was in the Marines, he was in a helicopter crash. All the soldiers with him in that helicopter died. He was the only one who survived. He was able to swim to shore. He was not able to get back to them. He thought he was fine, which is the case with so many of our soldiers. They get out, they're asked, are you okay? Oh, yeah, I'm fine. They want to go home. They want to get out. They're fine. But moral injury is something that sits with you and builds. 3 years after he was discharged, he went to the ocean and heard the water, and it just came crashing down on him. He became heavily alcoholic and drug abuse and basically was destroying his life. But the he was able to get help from a really wonderful counselor at the Durham VA. And now he goes all over the country talking about against war. He works with the Vets for Peace. If you get any kind of anti-war emails, you'll usually see his name in them. So he came to Quaker House, and he's gone with me to a couple and spoken with me on moral injury to a couple places. He's a wonderful guy. He's still, notice it says recovering. He's still recovering. I don't know if you've heard about the Stella. Oh, time. Oh, my gosh. Thank you, Deborah. Okay, I better get on with it here. He's still recovering. I'll put it that way, but he's really working hard. Papermaking for veterans. We had this guy come and say he wanted to do papermaking for veterans, and we had a whole backyard filled up with veterans doing papermaking. It was awesome. We had a guy come and talk about his work in Vietnam. A lot of veterans find that it's very healing to be in, to go back to Vietnam and work. We have an AA meeting on Wednesday nights. They asked if they could meet at Quaker House because no church would allow them to meet there because their name is Agnostics and Others. And we thought, this is a nice place to give them a home. They are our lost lambs. Let's invite them in. Please come and use Quaker House. First month we were at Quaker House, a woman came up and said, would you mind if we taught mindfulness classes at Quaker House? I said, sure. So they've been going on. We've had many veterans and spouses come there for healing. Mindfulness is fabulous for PTSD. Here we are doing tabling at many different places, the Minister's Fair, domestic violence. And the winner is, we've been getting awards. We got an award for our, what was it, I'm trying to find it, for doing our work and helping the veterans and other people. And we got an award from the Human Relations Commission for our work to improve race relations. We got a Peace Action Peacemaker Award, and the plaque over there was given by the chaplain who wanted me to do the moral injury work. He had me come and give a presentation for his Saber Leaders family retreat. That was the wives and the husbands, and it was the wives and the husbands in this case. They were about to leave, and the wives were very grateful to hear about moral injury. The husbands were very uncomfortable. They didn't want to hear that before they were about to leave. Okay, so we have lots of peace resources, and they're all on our table. Things that Chuck wrote, we have a moral injury booklet that is free that someone gave us to give out. These are our books that we've published this year. The Conscientious Objection Is This For You book. And a woman in Florida who is very active with AVP, Cecilia Yoakum, she's a psychologist. She heard one of my talks about moral injury and decided she was going to write a book and donate it to Quaker House about strategies and interventions that help with moral injury. And I have that also out there. And we have two Quaker Speak videos that came out this year, so you can Google it and see the video on conscience objection and on the GI Rights Hotline. How can you help? My gosh, you can help us so many ways. Just telling people about us, looking at our videos, getting our newsletter. There's a sign up for our newsletter out there. There's a woman in Community Friends. It just writes me sweet little notes of support.